From the Mills Fleet Farm Studios, three signals, one mission. WTVX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WTVZ Eden Prairie. It's always sports talk on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. 105theticket.com, a Cumulus station. We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
Out of the 12 safeties in all.
There we go. There's better an infield hit.
Hunter blasts this one to left, and it's gone. A three-run home run for Torrey Hunter, and the Twins are back in the game.
Yeah, no infield hit there. Torrey with his eighth home run of the year. Got a knuckleball up and puts the Twins right back into the ball game. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Pitch like you can. Oh, what a great play by Brian Dozier.
Takes one away from Betts. He hits another one well to left. This one's fair and off the wall. Maurer scores. And the Twins have three in the ninth on a double by Escobar. It's now 7-4.
Go, 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 go.
Where was Dick Bremer?
He's taking a night off.
Oh, why?
Did you recognize that voice without him screaming goal?
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
He sounds a lot different doing baseball than doing
Still.
The wild. No, he does a good job. That's Fox Sports North. Anthony LaPlanta, right?
LaPlanta.
What am I saying, LaPlanta? Let me ask you this. How about those Twins?
Back in first.
Back in first. Got a one-game lead. In yesterday's game, down 4-0. Tied up. And in the ninth inning, they rally with four more runs. And the big thing, I give this to the Paul Molitor, he has Joe Maurer bunt. Wasn't the throwing error. Sandoval couldn't hold on to the ball. Went under his glove. So things worked out pretty good for him. They scored a few more runs after that, and off they went.
The Pandas don't have very good hands.
Yeah. Off they went to a 32-21 record. Well, we talked about it the other day. Now, this is worth noting. 33 of the 53 teams they've played, or, you know, the losing records of 33 of the 53 games they've had against losing teams. Still, though, you beat the teams that that are bad, and you go 500 with the other ones. They go. We said it last week, but now you're looking at a team that's 53 games in. You go 500 the rest of the way, you're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah.
You know, and there's
definitely not 90 losses.
No, not at all. You're looking at 90 wins where they'd be heading. And it is June 5th, and they're in first place by a game. Detroit talked about a bit of a tailspin. They've lost seven straight. Cleveland hasn't really gotten anything, going here. And Kansas City, actually, of the teams in their division, the only team that's got a winning record of the last 10 is Cleveland. They've won 6 out of 10, and your Twins are 7 out of 10. And even the first couple of games of the month didn't go well, but now they're 500 for the month.
Yeah, they're back at it.
And they're home!
They were just thrown off by that Monday off rain delay.
That'll throw anybody off, that sort of deal. And now they got got a weekend with Milwaukee, a team that's struggling itself.
Worst team in the league.
Yeah, so that's things are good. Looking good for your Twins. And it's T-minus, 27 games before they get Irvin Santana back?
Is it somewhere in there?
Yeah, somewhere around there. But then it's
31 and 21
But it's
right
like
now.
A jolt. Yeah, they're 32 and 21. But it's a jolt to get, you get him back. We talked about it a few weeks ago. It's like having a midseason trade, getting an ace who can't pitch for you if you make the postseason. But if they make the postseason, I think they'll be happy just to get in there and see what they can do.
Well, most teams cut it down to, there used to be a three-man rotation. Now they've kind of gone with a four-man rotation in the playoffs. So he's the odd man out. So your rotation's fine if you get to the playoffs.
He's the odd man out, but he presumably would be your best pitcher over the second half of the season. But the fact that you're going to get him, the guy who you thought would be your ace, he certainly won't be worn down. You know, and if with any luck, some of those steroids are still in his system to juice him up a bit, and they can really get things cranking. Were you working late last night? Did you catch any of the game one of the NBA Finals?
I caught the second half.
I'll tell you what, I watched most of the game. It was a great game until it left regulation and went into overtime when Cleveland missed its final 12 shots.
Yeah.
Or 12 in a row and lost, not the final 12. Yeah, they wind up losing 108-100. And the biggest loss could have been Kyrie Irving. I will give Kyrie Irving credit for this. He tried bravely to to walk off the court with as little limp as possible. Mm-hmm. But once he got behind the curtain, oh, my God, you could see the pain he was in.
Yeah, he looked like he was about to fall over.
Yeah, he threw his shirt on the ground, and the limp became much more severe. And he was just north of despondent when he was talking about it. He knows this is not a good one. Supposed to be an MRI today. They don't think it was looked at by a knee specialist last night. Didn't think it was ACL or MCL, but the MRI will tell the real tale. I just don't see how a guy who's missed a couple of games already in the playoffs with the knee, how he can play Sunday the way he was limping.
Even if there's no structural damage or anything, if it's a sprain or a strain, they'd be dumb to throw him out there and risk it again.
Well, and see, that's where there's an issue, too, because both his father and his agent have a problem with Cleveland. I mean, they want this guy to have a long career. He's 23.
Mm-hmm.
About pushing him and forcing him to play before he's ready. And he played a lot of minutes last night until he got hurt.
Yeah.
He and LeBron were rarely off the floor.
And he looked really good playing, too.
He
made
a
huge stop on Steph Curry when...
Oh, on the backboard?
Yeah.
I saw that, and you saw it, too, multiple times.
Yeah.
It looked like he must have some very strong fingers to have altered the shot much that it ricocheted off the backboard. Because it just looked like he got a couple of fingers on it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's all it takes.
Well, it was, because it wasn't. But that was... And also, as you watch it, you think about it. Steph Curry is rising already. For him to get up as quickly as he did...
Yeah.
To get a swipe at it, to touch, get the ball. It was an incredible play. There's some talent on the floor. There may not be as much if he doesn't play on Sunday. But LeBron was, watching him. You did watch the second half, right?
Yeah.
LeBron, he went to that one play to Mozgov was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
On the dunk.
The quick dunk.
I've never seen a guy move that fast. I didn't think he could.
It didn't even look like the net moved.
No, but to see
a
guy...
The ball just went flying.
A guy that big, it's like he took off from the foul line and just slammed it. But were you wondering, too, 80% of the time, at least, when LeBron drove anywhere near the basket, he either made it or he got fouled. Why wasn't he doing more of that? Especially down the stretch.
Yeah, I think, that was kind of his game plan, because that's what he was doing quite a bit. But once they put Iguodala on him, who's been one of the better defenders in the NBA for the last several years, even at his age, it's a little tougher to back Iguodala down every single play.
Well, but Andre Iguodala was on him for most of the game. And Iguodala, when you look at it, you say LeBron, the fact that he had 44 points is terrific, but he missed 20 shots. Not to do with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have, if you didn't have Iguodala there to defend him, he might have had 60 or more. He did an incredible job.
He was backing down anybody else. They were doing a good job of trying to get that defensive switch so LeBron could do that and back him down. But towards the end of the game, Andre Iguodala was not giving him anything.
No, and Iguodala, he still chipped in 15 points, too. And he was 6 of 8 from the field, and he played a great game. I mean, some of those players, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, both had strong games.
I thought it was
fun.
One of my buddies on social media stuff was saying LeBron's out there proving that basketball is not a team sport. And I kind of thought that was funny because who won the game? The better team.
Yeah.
LeBron couldn't lift his own team. It is a team sport.
He tried.
He's the best player on that team, and he's surrounded by next to nothing, players that weren't giving him anything last night.
If he doesn't have Kyrie Irving, he will have to score 60 points or more.
Yeah, and that might not even be enough.
No, it won't be.
J.R. Smith and Shumpert are jacking up shots that aren't going in.
Well, J.R. Smith, he was 3 of 13, so he missed 10 of his shots. Yeah, he didn't get anything cooking. None of them really. And by the way, actually, I like watching Shumpert's. That hairdo is something.
Yeah, that old the flat top style.
Flat top. It's like, what's his normal height? What would you say it is? I mean, if you measured him, if you didn't care, well, let's just say that
6'4", 6'5", somewhere in there, I think.
Well, he's listed at 6'5". With that hair, he's at least 6'10" or close to 7 feet tall. If you measure
Perfect.
To the top of the hair, he's got some height going there. So we've got a great show for you. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little more basketball about the finals with Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press. Also got Mike Gelfand's with us today, and a special guest. First time Mike and Brad Blanks have been together on the air in about 5 years. You don't want to miss that. Jim Suhan, Ruth Lord. We got a great show for you. Be right back with Marcus Fuller.
Bob Sansevier, 105 The Ticket.
Joined Radioactive Sports at the office on Washington Avenue for Twins Ticket Friday.
The superstar Mike Morris and I will be there from 4 to 7 outside on the patio, along with our ticket girls, giving away tickets to that night's game and future games.
From the office on Washington and 844 Hay Workers, get fueled up before the game with $3 cold domestic drafts and a great full menu.
Radioactive Sports, live at the office on Washington before Friday Twins home games. Then walk right over to Target Field.
Finally, an office you can have fun at with Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Captain Munro should be knocked down in.
Basketball, give me, give me, give me the ball.
Knock Captain down to an E1.
E1?
That's like a lowest private you can be.
Okay.
Anyway. Duckhead! We are joined by Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. Marcus, is it over in 4 or 5?
Well, do we know how serious Kyrie Irving's injury is?
Well, we know he couldn't walk. And right. It's unlikely he's going to suddenly get a magical, you know, bounce in his step.
I think, you know, obviously, you know, if Cleveland took any of these first two games, you know, it'd be heavy in their favor. But I don't think, you know, you can, I think this, a lot of people out there maybe expected this to go 6 or 7 games. Maybe, you know, most of us want 7
I
games
did.
The way the first game went. But I think, you know, if he comes back, the third game, once they get back to Cleveland, I think this is going to be at least 6 or 7 games. And, you know, the way they played down the stretch there, you know, a lot of people are saying, the broadcast on ESPN, they talked about how Kevin Love was a missing piece. I don't see that at all. I mean, there's some plays down the stretch there where, LeBron, you know, passed it off to Mozgov and Mozgov couldn't finish a couple plays. He didn't get enough support there down the stretch, especially in overtime. And that's why they lost. I didn't see the Kevin Love was a big missing piece there. And I think if Kyrie is anywhere close to he was in game one, I think they have a shot, and I think it'd go 7 games.
Well, and also they missed their last 4 shots at the end of regulation and 12 straight when you count overtime between
right.
the fourth and overtime. And I had said this a little while ago, obviously before you joined us, why LeBron, every time he drives, he either makes it or he gets fouled. Even if he's the one doing the fouling, they call a foul on the, you know, on one of the Warriors. Were you surprised that he wasn't going, driving? He did, I mean, there were, certainly were drives to the basket, but I thought he'd be doing it almost every time down when they needed a big play.
Well, I mean, in the second half, I mean, he was making some incredible shots. I mean, they were isolating him a lot, and, Steve Kerr decided not to double quite often. I was surprised by that. And, you know, 44 points, you know, Andre Iguodala finally, you know, I think in overtime there made him take some, actually in regulation, in the regulation there made him take tough jumpers, and they didn't fall. And, you know, I think that, you know, for the most part, it was his supporting cast. I wouldn't blame LeBron for anything in that game. I mean, he gave it everything he had. Certainly he could have hit a couple more jumpers, there in overtime and regulation there. But I think that LeBron, is he capable of something more than he did in game one? Sure. I mean, his assists could go up, rebounds could get a little higher. But as far as his scoring and his aggressiveness, I mean, especially in the first half, when they had that 14-point lead, I mean, this is the kind of player that you figure, if he came to Cleveland, if he had the right supporting cast around him, including Kevin Love, there's no doubt that they'd win a championship or they'd be in this position. But, I mean, you look at the guys around him, Bob. I mean, without LeBron there, or without Kyrie Irving
it's
there,
nothing.
This might be a sweep. Yeah, it's incredible that they've gotten this far.
Who do you, now, talking to Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, if you were handing out MVPs per game, who would you give it to? I know who I'd give it to.
Well, there's no doubt that LeBron, you know, he just, I don't know if I can get shocked anymore by the way he plays, but if you looked at past finals, he relied so much to me on his perimeter game. In these playoffs, and especially last night, I mean, he's posting up. He's finishing a lot of plays at the rim where I think he's most deadly with his size and his athleticism. There are not many players out there. I mean, Andre Iguodala gave up 50 pounds or more, on LeBron. And if he continues to play that way near the basket, this is going to be a close series again if Kyrie is healthy. So I no doubt LeBron is my MVP in that first game, but come on, the bench, I think the bench for the Warriors You know, if you're going to give it to the winner,
he
I think
five guys
the Warriors.
Stepping up. Well, if I were giving an MVP to yesterday's game, it'd be Iguodala. Because LeBron, the number, 44 points is terrific, but he did miss 20 shots, and
right.
Iguodala had a lot to do with that. He could have had 60 or 70 points.
He took 38 shots, right?
Yes, 38, 18 to 38.
And I think he scored 42 points against the Warriors in the regular season, and he shot, in the 20s there for attempts. And, the bench for the Warriors all playoff long. Maurice Faith didn't do much in the playoffs, and all of a sudden he scores 6 points, and he helped them kind of turn around that first half when they were down 14. You talked about Iguodala, Cestus Azili, a lot of these guys. You know, they just come in and they're ready to fill in that role. And that's just something the Cavaliers don't have, and especially with Kyrie out, LeBron has to do a lot of the ball handling. He's doing everything else. I just hope that he's healthy enough to make this a series because, we saw in game one what the Cavaliers are capable of when they're healthy.
Well, and I see without Kyrie Irving, yes, it's a completely different, series, but they were down 14, the Warriors, early. Because they had stage fright. These guys were not veterans
totally.
Of an NBA Finals. Now they know they could win. They have to be on such a high. I just think this team they're not going to fall behind by 14 points again in this series.
Come on, Bob. They had Rihanna and Jesse Jackson in the crowd. You wouldn't be nervous?
you had Reggie.
NBA Finals.
You had two Jackson. You had Reggie Jackson, too, in the crowd.
Reggie Jackson.
Magic was in there.
Yeah. Do you know who Dave Chappelle is, Bob?
I'm sorry. Who did you say? I know who Dave Chappelle is.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know if he'd disappear again because he had a hell of a show and remember he just bugged out on it where did he go? He went overseas somewhere and just disappeared.
A Warriors fan. That's what he did.
Yeah. And by the way, why in all these years that they've been there, why have they not moved their arena out of that dump in Oakland?
I've been there. I went to school in the Bay Area, San Jose State.
Yeah, but you were a cake eater.
I went to Warriors games just because I was just in love with the NBA. I always, went for their opponent, not to watch them play. I think that their fan base, it picked up, quite a few years ago. And they had, Baron Davis. I think they had a pretty exciting team that they kind of flamed out early in the playoffs, but they always kind of gave it a good run. And, they just continue to build. I remember the days when they had Run TMC and, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin. Don Nelson there. Those are my favorite teams to watch. I grew up, watching Bay Area sports, with the Niners and the Warriors with Mullen. And to see them, what they went through after, those years with Tim Hardaway and Mullen, to see them come back and go to the finals, it's pretty incredible. Really, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves, they were probably a better team, back with Kevin Garnett, a lot better team than the Warriors. And it's just amazing to see the direction of two franchises.
Yeah, the way they've gone. Now so when did you lived in Hawaii, and when did you live in the Bay Area? When you were a little older, or when you were real young?
Late 90s, and then in the 2000s. It's always my second home because my mom lived in the Bay Area. I went back to visit her, and she always took me to either Warriors games or Niners, Raiders. Anything I could get. I was spoiled, really, in the Bay Area for pro sports. You could pretty much get everything you want. You had San Jose Sharks there. It's kind of like living here. You pretty much get a taste of everything. And, what the Giants have done, too. It seems like it all happened when I left. The Niners got good again. The Giants got pretty good again. Obviously the Warriors did. I've always been a pretty big fan of Bay Area pro sports.
I always like going to Candlestick.
Yeah.
There was something about it was nice.
If you were in the shade, then you're in trouble.
Yes.
It's almost like being in Minnesota. The breeze came coming off the water there, and it dropped about 20 degrees.
I've always hated going to Oakland Alameda County Stadium or whatever the heck they call it now.
For a time there, they were the dominant team.
I know.
The Giants took a while to kind of catch up. What they were able to do with kind of their farm system and everything, but after a while, the Giants. Once they got rid of Barry Bonds and Dusty Baker was my guy, but what they were able to do with that franchise and with their pitching, it's unbelievable. And like I said, I always have kind of a place in my heart for Bay Area sports. And my mom still lives there. My brother still lives
there.
Where
are they? Are they on the San Francisco or Oakland side?
They're on the San Francisco. Well, they're on they're San Jose and Santa Clara side.
Okay.
They're further east, East Bay. But you know what, Bob? They have the Niners have their stadium now in Santa Clara.
Yep.
And the Big Ten has a bowl game there now, Foster Farms Bowl. And I told our editors, I said, hey, I want to still cover football when bowl game comes around. If they go to the Bay Area, that's my town. I want to go there.
And you can, you know how you get them
playing in the Bay Area.
You just tell them, well, I don't need to just get a hotel. I can stay with my folks. They'll jump on that if they hear they can save a few bucks.
No, I'll stay in the hotel, and I'll still stay.
Yeah,
in the
then you're not gonna go. Then they won't send you. Now, you know what was fun though after the game, because I switched over to ESPN, watching the people who wouldn't leave. They just were hanging out outside the stadium or the arena, having a great time. That's kind of neat to see. They just wanted to party.
Like I said, the Warriors, it's just incredible the fan base that they've kind of jumped on this team. You know, it started with Mark Jackson. And some of the excitement that he was able to bring back. And it's just a shame. I watched it kind of with Avery Johnson and Dallas Mavericks. Kind of the team that he built, he helped build. I'm going to say give him all the credit, but the team that he helped build ended up winning a championship, in Dallas. And it's kind of a similar situation with Mark Jackson. I mean, he's the one that helped draft, Draymond Green and Curry and a lot of these guys, Splash Brothers. And so to see a team that he kind of helped build, probably win a championship here. He got emotional there a couple times, but again, Steve Kerr, I don't want to take credit away from him. I mean, there's a reason why they're there. He's a perfect fit for coach, the type of coach that they need.
And the other thing, if you were Golden State and you lost last night, and it looked for a while there that it could happen, it would have been tough for them because they've been so dominant at home. They were 47-3 during the season, 8-1 in the playoffs. That would have been a tough one for them to swallow, and I think we would be looking at a game seven. But you keep going back to the Kyrie Irving, and Hellboy and I were talking about it. He actually handled it as well as you could when he limped off the court. But when he got behind the curtain, that limp really became pronounced. He was trying as hard as he could not to look as hurt as he was. So
right.
I give him a lot of credit just for that.
And you have to think about it. He's a young player, they keep core of this team together, whether Kevin Love stays or not. I mean, this is a championship caliber team in the East. And if he comes back and tries to come back and he's not fully healthy and he re-injures it, maybe even worse, I mean, we're talking about something that could affect him next season. When this could be an even better team. So, I mean, this is game one, and for sure, he's going to give it a shot. But, as the playoffs kind of, or as the finals kind of move along here, you got to question whether it's good for him to play if he's not 100%.
Well, there's been a battle going on with his agent and his father and Warriors management about he's got a long career ahead of him at the age of 23.
Exactly.
They better get in. And that's why they went to see Dr. James Edwards to get his opinion on it the last time when he missed a couple of games.
It's a scary thing for a player like him because he's all about quickness and his ball handling ability, being able to get to the basket. He can make a career off his shooting ability and being able to handle the ball and be a true point guard, but for him, he has to be able to score and get to the basket. I mean, that's part of his game, and if you take away that from him, his athleticism, his quickness, he's a much different player, and I just hate to see a young player go through this first finals with LeBron, and like you said, I mean, they have every shot to win that first game, and if he comes back, sure, they'll have a shot in game two, but I wouldn't rush it.
I just don't see any scenario where he can come back in 2 days the way he was limping and the way he talked about it afterward. Because he talked about the last time he hurt, he knew there was a little tweak, but this one, from hearing him talk, he's really worried about this one.
He is. And, I think that LeBron, he'll sit back and realize that he'll have another shot. And, this is not a deep team, but certainly, he's capable of taking his game to even a higher level when it comes to assists and when it comes to handling the ball. LeBron could take on that role and be more of a facilitator. If he gets more effort from J.R. Smith offensively and some of these other guys, and I think they could give it a run, maybe six games, even if Kyrie's not healthy.
Well, Marcus, I'd love talking. We'll talk. Let's catch up next week after another game, after game two. We'll see where it's at. Marcus
right.
Fuller from the Pioneer Press.
Appreciate it, Bob.
Thanks a lot on TwinCities.com. Marcus, we'll talk to you later. We're going to come back. Got a little threesome, little D-bag of the day. By the way, one of the D-bags is a big-time NFL executive. You want to hear what this guy did? We'll be right back.
Later today on Radioactive Sports with the superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson at 4.
Today we're live from the Office Pub and Grill on the corner of Washington and 3rd, literally just steps away from Gate 3 at Target Field as the Twins host those Dirty Rotten Brewers. We have free tickets to this weekend's series.
The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
3-0, it's the magic number.
Surely you can't be serious.
Yeah, it is. It's the magic number.
Hi.
Somewhere in that ancient mystic trinity.
No way!
Magic number.
How long is this thing? We've never played the whole thing out. How long is it going?
The whole thing?
Is it like a 20-minute song?
There's still 2 minutes left.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Because I think I usually cut it off around here. Let me hear another couple of seconds of this. Who did this? Is it from a movie or is it a real song?
I believe it was originally a Schoolhouse Rock thing, and Blind Melon made it.
Oh.
Or redid it, something like that.
Well, Schoolhouse Rock was with, what's his name, right?
It was something like, it was an educational thing. We're learning how to count by threes and stuff.
Wait a minute, was it Schoolhouse Rock a movie?
Dude, that's School of Rock.
School of Rock, okay. What is Schoolhouse Rock? I don't care. I don't. There's our guy.
Funny.
That's our fella.
That's him too, right?
That's it? I see. That is also Tom Schreier from the Tom Schreier and Friends show on Sunday mornings. No, it's not called
Super
that.
Super Friends.
Yeah, it's Sam Ekstrom and Tom Schreier on Sunday mornings doing the old wake-up call for, what, 8 to 10?
Yes.
Let's see. Catching on. Anywho, you got yourself a couple of questions here, right?
Yeah, there's a few of them in there.
Let's hear a couple of them, maybe.
Hey, Bob.
Yes,
sir. I have 3 questions for you. Number 1, Joe Mauer is now batting .263. Should the Twins move him down in the batting order?
Well, when it comes to Joe Mauer, what they should do and what they will do are separate items. They're not going to move him down in the order. It would be too much of a disrespectful move, and honestly, if they move them down in the order, all the people start, it just roils people about the $23 million a year. But paying a guy $23 million and he's batting 8th? Or 7th or 6th or whatever the heck it is, it's not going to happen. He's not going to move down. But, you know, when you take a look at it, look what he did last night or yesterday afternoon. He had the bunt and it wound up getting, I mean, it rallied him.
It worked.
Well, it wasn't quite all his doing. I mean, it didn't hurt that the ball went under the third baseman's glove, but that started the rally. It got him 4 runs in the 9th inning. And they were down 4. That's the thing about this team. They're down 4-0, and Torrey Hunter had the big home run. And he, by the way, he's having an incredible season, not just, you know, on and off the field. He's really coming through for this team, which is good for him and good for them. First place Twins. Here's where I would the only way I think I would argue you got to move them, and that they may look at it if they were in a tailspin and they were doing horribly. They're in first place.
Yeah, they're in first place. I guess you don't have to mess with a good thing, but
I don't disagree with you.
Moving him around somewhere.
I just don't see it happening. I mean, if they move him around, it's going to be, you know, up in the order, not down in the batting order. Just because this is the one thing, this organization has always respected Mauer, even when he struggled. And really, most of the struggles have been the last few years. Terrible last year, because I think he... I still think that mentally he could not, a year ago, could not get his mind around the fact that he was no longer a catcher. So much of his identity was tied into being a great catcher with a catcher who produced like no other catcher had when it came to batting average. Well, that's different now. Now he's, actually, you could argue he's a first baseman producing the way many first basemen never have because he doesn't have the power.
Now he's hitting like the average catcher. But he's playing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Now he's the average catcher. And he's, last night, even, you know, he did help set up the game-winning rally with a bunt that was messed up. But he does have an on-base percentage that, 320, which, again, for him, that's not very, usually his batting average is at least there. But he's certainly not killing him. The one that's interesting, I mean, Torrey Hunter. 3 for 5, 3 ribbies, .282 batting average. He has 35 RBI for this team. Plouffe's got 30. Eduardo Escobar's got 20. So they're getting production from guys. And Aaron Hicks gets his 5th stolen base.
Boom.
Boom. This guy's giving him stuff, too. It's team's unbelievable.
It's good to see Aaron Hicks actually, you know, producing.
Yeah, if you want to look at it that way, I had him on my rotisserie team, and I let him go to activate Rusney Castillo. That was a mistake. Yes. Anyway, let me not dwell on that.
Quickly here, Ben did some research for us.
He did. Good job, Ben.
3 is a Magic Number is the pilot episode of the Schoolhouse Rock series and the first episode of the program's first season, Multiplication Rock, title song written by Bob Doro. All this stuff. I don't want to butcher too many names. Dave McCall observed that his son had learned every Beatles lyric but could not remember multiplication tables.
Was this all off the top, Ben, or was this something you actually looked up? Does he know where to how to get... Can you make the microphone work in there?
He's on the wrong one.
You're on the wrong one.
It's the big red button.
Work on it.
Superstar always says.
It was actually off of Wikipedia where I got it and just quickly
okay,
looked it up.
When I ask a question like that, say, no, I just knew it.
Yeah.
You look a lot better when you just say, I knew it.
Easier to move up that way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
don't do that to him.
Mentioning Wikipedia doesn't really help my credibility either.
No. So, you know, next time we'll start this thing over. So, Ben, did you just know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing just a whole bunch of School of Rock research my whole life. I've boned up on everything
now,
there is to know.
There's a climber. That guy's going to go somewhere.
It works.
It works with an attitude like that. All right, what do you got for a number two question?
Number two. The Timberwolves are reportedly looking at the top two guards in the draft. Is there any chance that the Wolves do not take one of the big guys?
I don't know why they're even wasting their time. Although there's people that will argue D'Angelo Russell should be the first overall pick.
Yeah, and the funny thing is they're even bringing in Emmanuel Mudiay for a workout, and they had to convince Moutier's people that he is a serious contender for the number one pick. So
he's not, though. It's ridiculous. I mean, unless the only way it would make any kind of sense is if the scenario comes about that I think we talked about, was it yesterday, the day before, that they unload Rubio and work a deal with one of the teams with the top picks. You'd have to be a top five to get, certainly Russell, you're talking top three.
Which reportedly Flip has said to somebody or some source that has mentioned he'd be open to trading Rubio for the right deal.
So, okay, to get rid of, it wouldn't be enough to get rid of Rubio. You would have to also trade, well, your two number twos, I mean, it's a second round pick. You're not going to get like a top player at either of those. So what do they really have to give besides Rubio that teams would be interested in?
Buttinger is now on an expiring deal after he exercised his player
option. Buttinger.
Kevin Martin's on an expiring deal.
It's Kevin Martin. I mean, it's not really... Rubio's your chip. You're not going to get rid of Wiggins, obviously.
Next option is draft picks.
Zach LaVine, is anyone going to be that excited about him? I mean, I have no trouble getting rid of him.
Like, that was somebody speculating that they were pitching the idea of a Mudiay, LaVine, Wiggins backcourt.
Mudiay, LaVine, Wiggins. I think it would be it'd be nice if they can do it, but that also includes keeping the first overall pick, right?
Well, that kind of remains to be seen.
Well,
they could be saying they're really interested in D'Angelo Russell to try and get Philly to move up because reportedly they really, really want D'Angelo Russell.
Well, they don't need a big guy.
That way they could take the second big man, whoever's still there. Most likely it would be, I would think it would be Okafor at that point.
Well, maybe that's what they're pulling, but it's not uncommon, though, for teams, even with a top pick, to bring everyone in because they just do it because they want to see what's there.
They're doing their due diligence.
Yeah, it's a due diligence. It really wouldn't make sense if they didn't do it. The other thing is you want to make these other guys, you know, maybe the two top guys worry a little bit. I don't know why.
And then this whole debate going on, you know, our friend of the station, Jerry Zagoda for the Star Tribune,
yeah,
talked to John Calipari this morning. And I wrote it down so I could remember it. Calipari said, wow, it's a debate. It seems like that would be the only city where there would be a debate.
Ooh, there's a shot.
He's talking about his boy Towns.
Yeah.
Should be number one, hands down. Shouldn't be talking about anybody else.
How about that? Now, if you went to Coach K, you'd probably get something similar, though not as snarky.
Yeah. He would just say, oh, Jahlil Okafor is a very good player and is a very, very deserving of a number one selection.
That's
something
what you
like that.
You get that from Coach K, but from Coach
classier.
Cal, from telling them what a bunch of dopes in Minnesota that they would have this. Now, did you see that Carl Anthony Towns was, I don't know about the whining, but he was dining in L.A., going out with one of the Lakers, Julius Randle. I mean, he was having some food with him, checking things out. He's already got his mind. He knows. As far as he's concerned, he's going there. That's the other thing. These guys know where the Wolves are tilting.
Yeah.
Because their agents have found out. They have a pretty good idea. And I don't doubt that Towns' agent and Okafor's have called the Wolves to get a gauge on what's going to happen. I don't think either one has thrown out, don't draft us. But no. Wouldn't it be something if they both said don't draft us and they do wind up with D'Angelo Russell? But he may say don't draft me. Maybe Moutier is the only one who wants to come here.
It's just, it's too bad. Teams thinking they can, or players thinking they can come into the league and go where they
but
want
they
to
can.
Go.
They can pull it it's, off. They
it's
have.
It's just dumb.
Okay. This is the problem that the Wolves face. They're number one. The Lakers are number two. What kid in his right mind would say, I want to go to Minnesota when going to L.A., not even just because it's the Lakers, to L.A., because they look at it in terms of endorsement opportunities and just leading the light. I mean, look at all the options. These guys are they're kids. They're young men. They know all the Hollywood starlets are out there, all the hotties. That's what they want to meet.
But the thing is, you can come into this league.
There's
most,
a lot
most
here,
guys
too.
Aren't going to be superstars or all-stars even. Get to an all-star game until their third or fourth
they
year.
They don't know. They don't look at it that way. They look at just coming in as being a superstar immediately.
And they can only be signed to a three, I think, maybe four-year max deal for a contract.
They're
in their first
the...
rookie contract. So they don't even need to be around here for more than 3 years if they don't want to.
All right, look at it this way, though. All of these guys are living in the moment. If they weren't, they'd stay an extra year in college. They just want to, they put in their 1 year because they have to. They are not looking to, oh, put in 2 or 3 years here and then I'll go somewhere else. They want to go where they want to go and they want it now. I'm sure if you put a lie detector test on them, maybe even tell you, Okafor and Towns both want to be Lakers. So does D'Angelo Russell, I would think. Because it's much more attractive than coming here.
Even turn the whole draft into free agency instead. Watch all the players trying to line up to go to L.A. and not being able to because of salary cap things. And
well, if you had
somebody's got to come to Minnesota.
If you had territorial picks, D'Angelo Russell probably would wind up here. He's the closest player, closer than Kentucky would be, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking at the top picks, and that's how it used to be.
But Okafor from Chicago, Karl Anthony Towns from Jersey, just outside of New York. So the weather shouldn't be that big of a deal to them.
Well, they don't want to live in that weather anymore. They want to go to L.A. where the weather... You don't have to live here. Talk about it.
Your off-season is the summer. It's beautiful here. And then throughout the year, you're traveling all over the place.
Man, don't buy into that. I mean, I actually... And this is the truth. When I moved here in 1984, I absolutely thought I'd be here for a year or two. And then it was a stepping stone to someplace better and warmer. But if you've lived here, it's a great place to live. Even with the horrible winters. I mean, this time of the year helps make up
cold,
for it.
You can just stay indoors.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still cold out. This is a smart thing on a lot of companies' part when they bring people in from other cities or other states. They interviewed me in June. It was, you know, well, today's not a great day, but it was 85 and sunny. And I said, my God, how cold could it get when you got weather like this? I certainly found out. About a winter in, and when I took a nice breath and my lungs burned, I knew how tough it could be. We haven't had many winters like that lately. But do you recall some of those? When you take a breath and your lungs burn?
Well, it was not this past winter, but the year before. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It got above zero probably once in January.
Oh. Well, the best one was, and this is when I was covering the Vikings. When their final game, when the Super Bowl ended, they would end and then I'd go to the Super Bowl. I went right from the Super Bowl to some warm weather place. This is when I was single too. And 1 year, I don't remember what the year was, it was in the 80s. I called back and with the wind chill, it was minus 80 here.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I was happy to be in the Bahamas or whatever the heck it was. Anyway, we have a third question, right?
And finally, which event are you most interested in this weekend? The Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals, or the Belmont Stakes?
Well, I'm actually intrigued by all three of them, but if you were to say you could only watch one of them,
yeah,
I want to see that Belmont Stakes. I'm really intrigued by it to see if American Pharoah could win. I think we'll be talking to Mike Gelfand and Brad Blanks. Brad may be at the Belmont tomorrow, and Mike certainly knows he's been crunching the numbers on that one. And we'll talk more about that with him. But Materiality did not run in the Preakness, ran in the Derby and got boxed in. That is a horse that had not lost before the Derby. Both Materiality and American Pharoah are front runners. They love coming out of the gate and taking the lead and holding it. They could burn each other out over a mile and a half, and then somebody else could come scooting in like Frosted or who was it the chief liked yesterday, David Alcaro. He'd like Keen on Ice. So, I mean, it, that's what makes this one interesting. If those two horses battle it out and they well, you've, I mean, even in my youth, when I ran, you run too hard too fast and you're going to start to slow down at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to pace yourself. And I think the jockey, Espinosa, is smart enough to not let him go nuts or, you know, or not let him burn himself out. But who knows in the heat of the moment, if you think materiality is pulling away, you may want to try to go a little early for him, but he likely will burn out. But that could be, that horse being in there, and I want to ask Mike Gelfand about that, could be a bad thing for American Pharoah. I am looking forward to it, though. And I actually, after last night, in all honesty, if Kyrie Irving doesn't play, I don't think we're missing much if we don't watch it.
Yeah.
But I just don't see that being very competitive. No matter what LeBron does, he doesn't get enough help.
And if Tampa Bay can't win that game, you might not be missing anything there either.
That's a good team, though. I mean, I think that'll be a decent. Now I'm thinking, remember we were talking about the NBA Finals going seven and Stanley Cup Finals going five or six? I think the likelihood now, if Irving doesn't play, is it being flopped. The Stanley Cup Finals has a better chance of going longer. And this one without Irving, could be over in four, maybe five. Even if you go back to Cleveland, you don't have Irving and Kevin Love is there on, you know, he's on the sideline. You have those two guys on the bench. I think Golden State just has too much. They come at you in waves. Yeah. And again, as great as the numbers were for, you know, 44 points, which is terrific, he missed 20 shots.
A lot of those shots were missed towards the end of the game, though, when he was just forcing up buggos.
Okay. You know what, though? Okay, 15 were missed before the end of the game. You know, there were misses toward the end of the, and they did have opportunities there, too. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back. Talk Belmont with Mike Gelfand and reunited for the first. It's been about 5 years since Mike Gelfand was on the radio with Brad Blanks. That's going to be a lot of fun. Both of them, I mean, myself, all three of us have done, spent years doing, and Brad still does a KQ morning show. So we're going to have Mike Gelfand and Brad Blanks together again, talking Belmont when we return.
Radioactive Sports. Join the superstar Mike Morris and me, Ben Holson, weekday afternoons 4 to 7 on 105 The Ticket.
We are back. Not a bad choice. Hopefully our guest likes it.
Inconceivable.
We are back and we are joined by Mike Gelfand on a Friday that precedes what I would think is a, for a guy that likes to likes the ponies,
yeah,
is a pretty big weekend.
You know, it's always huge when you've got an opportunity for a horse to win the Triple Crown, even though logically we know that it's probably not going to happen. It's one of those situations, you know, I'll hold the ball, Charlie Brown, you kick it.
Yeah.
And 90,000 people, of course, this year will show up at Belmont because they won't let any more in, because they don't want any more urinating in the stairwell.
Now, Mike, did you hear what I had? I don't know if you caught what I had said. Is materiality a bad horse to be in this field for American Pharoah? Because they both like to run, to be front runners.
Well, you know, you've always got this question of pace, of course. The pace is the most mysterious aspect of a race because we can sit here, we can look at the past performances, and we can say, well, you know, American Pharoah probably wants to be on the leader just off it, but then materiality has really good early speed. And, you know, maybe these two will hook up early, but you never know. Because when you're trying to figure out what a jockey will do, that's an example of anthropomorphism.
Here you go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, jockeys, generally speaking, they're pretty good at riding a horse and whipping the horse, but when it comes to strategizing, Not really so much. And then you've got the trainer's instructions, and trainers are liable to tell a jockey anything. Trainers aren't necessarily great handicappers either. So that's the big question. You know, does anyone question American Pharoah early? We know American Pharoah probably isn't bred to go the distance. We know that if he's compromised early, it's going to be really bad for him. But the thing is, being bred for the distance, that may not matter. Most people are not going to understand this. A horse may not be bred to go, you know, you could have a quarter horse bred to go two furlongs, but if the horse that's in front can slow the pace down, then it's not really even a horse race for a mile or more. Then it's a horse race, you know, for half a mile. And if it's a horse race for half a mile, whoever in front is going to probably win, no matter what they're bred for. And that could very well happen here.
Well, I'm absolutely looking forward to it. And I think we have another guest on the line, somebody who you haven't spoken to on the air in a few years. And I think you'll be at the race, will you not, Brad Blanks?
Yes. Hey, Bob. Hey, Stretch. Hey, Don Bells. Yes, I'll be there. Front and center, a very early start for me. And as far as I can tell, it's going to be a late ending to this massive day.
Well, we really want to hear what I certainly want to hear who Brad is picking, because I've never known anyone who was as reliable as a negative indicator than Brad.
you have seen me in my junkie stages of gambling.
Yes.
There, Stretch. And,
yes.
I must say, I gave up gambling for a good 18 months, but fell off the wagon 2 weeks ago. And I'm been doing some erratic gambling, and tomorrow will be full of that.
Did you make a play on the Preakness?
Yeah, I did. You know how I came out of retirement? The money, the odds of American Pharoah was too good. It was pretty much even money or 4 to 5. So
right.
I said, I've got to get just money for jam. So I just took a bit of that and then set up shop. Was very happy with myself, but... You know, like any drinker that has a sniff of rum.
Right.
the fuse is pretty short, let me tell you.
Well, and Bob, what you probably don't know is that for Brad, 4 to 5 is a long shot. He'd rather get 1 to 5.
Yeah, sure. That's why I think I'm gonna be back at American Pharoah tomorrow.
Mike, is that a bad thing for American Pharoah's chances if Brad's backing him?
Well, if any horse that Brad backs is a bad horse for Brad.
Yeah,
I mean, some people just have the knack.
Yeah, the size of Brad Blanks is going to be straddling the tiny fetlocks of American Pharoah. So,
Brad and I were at the sports book in Vegas a few years ago, and I'm saying like, this is a pretty good horse here. You might want to look at this horse. It's 8 to 1. And Brad would point to a horse that was 1 to 5 and say, how about the 2, mate? Does the 2 look good?
I like short figs, Bob. Short figs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brad, what do you think of Mike Gelfand's imitation of you?
It's fantastic.
If
Gelfand was here tomorrow, he could bloody throw a saddle on me and take me out to the track. But speaking of jockeys, though, you gave a good ribbing there before, Stretch, about... the jockeys and a bit of their stupidity at times, but Espinosa, he's a new girlfriend. He's picked a good one there. She's a 5'10" blonde.
Oh, my.
Unbelievable. 19 years of age. I mean, I guess his first date with her is probably waiting for Chris Hansen to walk in the door. But other than that, they seem like a pretty good relationship.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you're 5'5", and which, you know, I'm not that much taller, and your girlfriend is 5'10", it opens up worlds of possibilities.
Yes. she looks like a model. She's a beautiful woman, and she just they denied that they're a couple by her, just saying that she's a very big California Chrome fan.
Ah.
Last year's Triple Crown Trail, of course. So
sure.
That's how they're hiding their beautiful relationship.
Brad, did he just start dating her after the Preakness, or have they been together all along?
He's had a last year. Let's hope he started straddling when she was 18. He got onto her. But he follows him around. They're in the Poconos, which is a resort Stretch's parents used to go in the late 50s in the Stretch.
Well,
the Poconos.
Poconos is probably what happens when the two of them are mating.
Very good.
You know, actually, I realize as I'm listening to you how much I miss you two being on together or getting together.
I really miss those Vegas trips and getting a chance to see Brad, because wherever he goes, there's a party. I'll tell you.
Yeah, we're very positive people, you and I, aren't we, Stretch?
at times, yeah. Well, Brad is. You know, Brad is. I had more fun with him. And at the horse book, I forced him to play a pick three with me, right?
Yeah.
So we've got three horses going down the stretch. They're down the stretch, and we've got all three of them in our pick three. We win anywhere from 150 to 500, right?
Yeah.
he's not even watching. He's watching the horse that was 2-5 that he bet. he's gonna get like $12 if the horse wins. There's just something about the man. He loves this. So without further ado, who do you like, Brad?
No, it'll be American Pharoah, obviously, but I think Keen Eye could be the horse running on that could mess things up. Well, obviously, a lot of people are saying Frosted, but, I've moved it out to Keen Eye. She got trouble in the Derby and along those lines, so it'd be a good chance. I mean, this is where Stretch will probably open up his exotic gambling, wouldn't you, Stretch, in this race, and hope that American Pharoah falls over and you collect a lot of big pulls then.
I don't really think you have to hope that he falls over. It's just horses, as you know, Brad, horses they're just not bred for endurance these days. And that's why you haven't had the Triple Crown winner in 37 years.
I just need one, Stretch. I need to hit it on the head. I'm getting sick of going out to Belmont. It's a disaster going out there.
Well,
here's
the thing. I mean, Todd Pletcher, the trainer, is a guy who really knows how to win the Belmont, and he's smart enough that he'll race horses there that he ran in the Derby. Then he takes the Preakness off.
Yep.
So the horses are relatively fresh. And here's the big. There's so many statistics here. Obviously, you can find anything to support what you like. But the one that really sticks with me is that since 2000, the average winner at the Belmont is paid 17-1.
Huh. Amazing.
So I'm going to go with Pletcher, but I'm going to go with the Pletcher horse that no one's picking, just for the fun of it. You know, this is just like a $5-$10 bet. This is not going to be one of those big Ahmad Zayat bets.
Right.
He's the owner, by the way, Bob.
I know who he is. Yeah.
He's the owner, and he's a guy who, basically, he's what there's a racetrack term we'd use to describe him, and that's called loser. this is a guy. He's an enigma. He's a paradox. He's an Orthodox Jew from Egypt.
Well, you don't find many of them in Egypt, do you?
No. Made all his money, by the way, selling really bad beer in the desert. He was a beer distributor, and he owned the company. You know, made a fortune, but he lost it all back. Yeah, at the racetrack. He from 2006 to 2008 alone.
Yeah.
His stable lost $52 million.
Oh my God! How's that possible? Bad?
What you do is you just pay a lot of money for mediocre horses, and then they don't win, and then you're paying $75 a day alone just to keep the horses at the track, and then you get the drug bill. That's what'll stagger you as an owner, is when you get the drug bill. And believe me, when Bob Baffert is training your horses, that drug bill is going to be really big. This guy. Here's a reason that I just don't trust the guy. For 20 years, he claimed that he'd been educated at Harvard.
Yeah.
And then when that was exposed as a lie, he said it was a clerical error. But here's what I think tripped him up. He didn't manage to spell Pharaoh right. A guy from Egypt ought to be able to spell the word Pharaoh, don't you think?
He couldn't spell his own horse's name.
Yeah, the horse's name is misspelled. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go with the Pletcher angle, but I'm taking the Pletcher horse that no one's picking, that's made from Lucky.
The one word made from Lucky, right?
Made from Lucky, it's one word. And, they think they ran out of, you can only have so many letters and spaces together. And, but this is a horse who, he's the one horse in the race that really nobody knew anything about until he won the Peter Pan Stakes in May at Belmont. And that's important because, having had a race at Belmont is huge in this race. And Brad will tell you that because Brad has probably been at the rail at Belmont more than once.
Oh, yeah, and the Peter Pan Stakes is a great lead-up race.
Horses have used that race to win the Belmont.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's going to be a great day. As I said, I'm going to be out there at 9 a.m. in the morning, I think. I'm going out with the Chief, Bob, and
he likes Keen on Ice, the Chief, David Alcaro.
Yeah, he does. He does like that, yeah. So we'll be out there, and it'll be a massive. So the hard thing is, my biggest problem is containing my drinking. can't just let loose because it's so hard to get out of there after the big one. You know, it's a disaster to get out of Belmont. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Is there a drink of choice at Belmont? You know, something similar to the mint julep?
Yeah, they can't get it right. They're changing it every year.
It's beer.
There is a new one this year. I didn't look it up, but I just saw the headline. They have a new drink this year, Belmont. But, you know, New Yorkers just drink anything, you know.
Well, yeah.
Hey, Mike, could you give him a good exacta or trifecta or to bet so he can make some good money out of this?
Well, I think, you're not going to, no exacta is going to pay anything with American Pharoah. American Pharoah's 3 to 5 in the morning line. I don't know. I don't think he'll be 3 to 5. I think he'll be 4 to 5 or even money. I think you're going to see a lot of people trying to beat the favorite. And I think what's going to happen probably is that materiality is going to be the favorite. Because he's the Pletcher horse that looks best. You know, he had a sensational victory in the Florida Derby, and he just had tons of trouble in the Kentucky Derby, and then of course he took the Preakness off. But I think if you take the longest shot on the board under American Pharoah, you're still not going to win anything.
No.
I would use the two Pletcher horses for sure. I guess I would use Frosted, who probably to me is he could be the second choice. It's probably just about a toss up between him and Materiality for second choice. But if you can get American Pharoah out of